Welcome to the Great Lakes Golf Podcast. This is Hunter Pulaski alongside Brad Burkaw. We are brought to you by Reed Furniture. Whatever your furniture need, it is Reed indeed. In this week's episode, the final event of the PGA Tour season is in the books with the Wyndham Championship. We will break that all down. We will break down the Women's Olympic competition is in the books. We have Lydia Ko getting the gold medal, leading to having all three medals. Now we move on to the US AM, which takes place this week. We have several guys from Michigan in the field. The FedEx St. Jude Championship, the first playoff event of three, taking place this week in Tennessee. We will break that down. And then there are some new golf courses coming to Michigan. I think one of them is somewhat older news, but new news to me, so we're going to talk about it. And then also, there is another one that I believe is actually fairly new to everyone that we will discuss. But first, Brad, Aaron Rye gets his first win on the PGA Tour at the ripe age of 29 years old. He kind of felt like it was coming for this guy. He had been knocking on the doorstep for what feels like at least a year and a half, 2 years now. Am I lost, Brad? May have
What's
lost.
What's that?
I thought I just lose you.
Oh, you lose me for a second?
I might have lost you.
You might have lost me. I'm back.
Okay.
I was saying Mr. Double Gloves.
Yeah.
That's what I call.
I don't know Mr. if people Double like Gloves. Him. I can't tell. And I think there was a time where I didn't like him one bit. He has definitely grown on me significantly over the last 6 to 8 months. He seems like a very down-to-earth, nice kid. But
he also has the club head covers.
Yeah,
which we've talked about. We've ripped on Aaron Rye. He's put in his he's gotten ripped on plenty. He deserves this win, I think.
Yeah,
this was a karma win for him.
Yeah, he doesn't make it easy on himself. The club covers is worse than the double gloves. Far, far and away. Just because I think those irons, they're replaceable, like very at this point now. So it almost feels like it's more like a stick now than it actually is. Like he's doing it because he wants to. It's almost like he's trying to be peer pressured into not doing it. So he's like, oh, I'm just gonna. And then he really puts his foot down on it, and I'm just gonna keep doing it.
And so what I can respect out of him, prefacing the club head covers are madness. I don't even use club head covers, but I do have a little ounce of respect for. There's got to be just a true nut, golf nut in him, that like one of my things that I like to do before a big round is I'll get the clubs out. I clean the grips. I clean the grooves. Like I'm detailing those bad boys, and I think that's kind of along that same vibe. It's like kind of like a little bit of a golf nut. So I can respect a tiny amount from that regard, because I mean, to be a professional who literally gets like free golf clubs and to still put club head covers on them is a pretty golf nut move.
Yeah, there's a that goes both ways. I almost think in a lot of ways it's like it's more golf nutty, like those guys you see that like have the hybrid that is just beat all hell with no club, yeah. With like no club head cover. It looks like it's been around the block.
Like Brooks Koepka 5-iron?
Yeah, or like, I'm thinking like a Cobra Baffler. One of those from like 10, 15 years ago that you just don't see a club head cover. It seems like the guys on tour like him. It seems like he, like I said, very, very down to earth. And it seems like I saw a tweet from Michael Kim this morning that he seems like he works hard. And this moment was definitely around on the horizon. And previously mentioned, he's obviously put in the work. He has 2 wins on the DP World Tour, played on the Challenge Tour. Kind of seemed like this moment wasn't too far away, and he's been on the leaderboard several times now. It took was the leader, Max Griesserman, just to completely puke all over himself. He turned in 31. So it really felt like he was just cooking with gas and was going to run away with this thing. He shot 60 on it was on Friday. I don't know what round it was, just because it was ended up being rain delayed, so they didn't end up teeing off until Friday afternoon. So they played 72 holes between Friday afternoon and Sunday afternoon. Most of the field did. So he was well in control. He holes out for eagle on 13. At this point, take a 4-shot lead with 4-shot lead with 4 holes remaining. Really, really have to feel like you have this thing, or rather 5 holes remaining, sorry. Really got to feel like you have this thing locked up, and then proceeds to make a quadruple bogey 8 on 14. you just can't do that. Really, one thing you probably can't do is he hits it out of bounds, hits the cart path. I'm sure you talk about some golf nuts, some real golf enthusiasts were probably just swearing up and down the yard talking about cart paths. You don't need cart paths. Cart paths wouldn't have happened over in Europe.
So that's a whole topic, because I myself think that the U.S. has a cart path problem. But
you know how much more aesthetically pleasing golf courses would look if there weren't car paths. They ruin the look so often.
I've just never understood why we felt the need to pave them. I think you can have a cart path and it can be gravel, and it's a less of an impact on golf shots, or even just like a sandy dirt, just 2 little ruts for the wheels.
Yeah, they had Kikuyu shells in Florida was the main cart path in a lot of places, and that was nice. It wasn't quite as firm as, so it was just like packed down sand essentially, and it would play like that too. But I mean, he hit a bad shot. He missed by 20 yards probably. So it's hard for me to like find sympathy for him, just given how badly he missed. But at the same time, it's just like, I don't know why it happened either. It's not like they had cart paths over in Europe and we were like copying them, and we were like, oh well, if they have cart paths, we gotta have cart paths. We thought of this all on our own.
Carts are definitely more of an American product than anywhere else in the world.
I think
it goes, we both know this, but I think most people may not, maybe they don't know, but overseas they're walking. They're not taking carts. They pretty much primarily walk as their main vessel of transportation for golf.
Yeah, and it would be something to think about. Something to think about. So he ended up making a quad there, bounced back with a really nice birdie on the next hole, and then made a double on 16. So real roller coaster there. Ends up losing by 2. Still played great. Still put himself inside the top 50, started at 64, got down to 47 because of it. Aaron Rye also put himself well in position. Now he went from outside of the cut line for next week's event at 53 all the way down to 25. Rounding out the rest of that leaderboard, JJ Spahn played really well and got himself in good position for conditional status next year. Needed to be starting for fall series next year. Went from 129 and not down to 98. Shooting 15 under par, closed with a 64 on Sunday. Ryo Hisatune finished also at 15 under, tied for third, shot 67 on Sunday. He also went inside of the top 100 from 107 to 84. Luke Lanton, solo fifth place. This kid is incredible. I feel like we talk about him. We have been talking about him a ton. There's not much else to say about him. He's so young and seems very, very promising. He's doing this on a lot of different golf courses too, which is exciting. Kid should go pro. He's got the USAM this week, and I don't know what his plan is moving forward, but he's leaving a few bucks on the table.
Yeah, I mean, I said it last maybe it was last podcast or the podcast before, but dude, drop out of college, man. Just drop out.
You can always go back.
You can always go always back. Go It'll back. Still be there. Credits you, last a while. Credits,
I bet you Florida State will welcome him with open arms.
Yeah, I mean, I say that jokingly, but I think it's very, I think it's going to be very safe bet that once he does make his way onto the tour, he's going to be a name that we'll be talking about quite frequently.
Yeah, and it looks like he if he continues to play at this level for the rest of the junior season between the USAM and a few other junior events, he'll have enough points via the accelerator program to earn his way that way. Maybe that's just kind of his plan, and maybe he enjoys college golf. And I'm not going to stereotype, but I feel like he's financially stable. I think Luke Clanton's family doing okay. So it's not like it's like he needs this money right away, and he's doing enough damage as an amateur. Maybe he's really wanting to play in the USAM.
Well, and even with, you know, I think NIL is something that we don't think about a lot in college golf, but is still like the reality. Like, these guys still can make money. And I don't know what his agreement was with Good, but I'd be surprised if he was doing that all for free.
Yeah, exactly. And I almost think like college golf, in a lot of ways, I feel like that could lead to a lot of NIL deals just with guys that just have a lot of money that were, whether they were on the golf team or they were somehow associated with the golf course that the team is a part of, or yada yada. I mean, there's just so many different ways for them to get NIL deals that I'm sure keep them happy while as an amateur. In solo sixth place, we have Austin Eckroat. In T7th, we have Ben Griffin, Adam Svensson, Trace Crow, Eric Cole, Billy Horschel. And then I typically would not do T12s, but I just have to get to one specific name. So in T12s, we have a bunch of them. Roger Sloan, this is all 11 under par. Roger Sloan, Chan Kim, Mac Messner, Keith Mitchell, Brandon Todd, Davis Thompson, Jacob Bridgman, Charlie Hoffman, Bo Hostler, and then finally, we were waiting on his results. Matt Kuchar finished T12. Something I don't think I've ever seen on the golf course, or at least on the PGA Tour. Matt Kuchar essentially walked off the golf course last night because it was too dark for him. They had not blown the horn. Later to find out that the rules official did give them an out, essentially, like, hey, if it's past what the sunset time is, the official sunset time, if you can finish this hole, or you can choose to mark your ball. And Cooch, of every player, in this case, there was only three left on the golf course. He decided to mark his ball and come back today, Monday, August 12th, the next day, and finish out. What are your thoughts on Cooch?
Just so absurd. One of the most absurd things I've ever seen. Just like, why? First of all, why? Why would you want to do that to yourself? I would rather play with a headlamp on to finish out. And I get these guys are playing for a lot of money. I get it. But I don't think he really even had a chance to improve his situation very much. And I don't know. That one was bizarre. I feel like what he was trying to do was kind of do a middle finger to the tour, to say, like, you guys should have called this, like, a few holes ago, but it ended up just everybody hating him. So it did not go as planned for Mr. Kuchar.
No, and I think I've heard six different renditions of or, like, kind of, like, mixed apologies slash kind of clarifications by Kuchar as to why he did what he did. And it all started, me not really even realizing, he just completely hit into the group in front of him on 18. So they teed off and hit into the group in front of them. The idea being you need to be teed off prior to that horn blowing to avoid having to come back. So they he blasts one into leaders and then decides to mark his ball. One of the, as said, one of the several reasons he gave was he didn't feel like he'd have enough time to assess the shot. And he thought the best score he was going to make last night was a bogey. he ended up getting line of sight relief from a scoreboard he couldn't even see because there were trees in the way. So he was able to drop his ball 15 yards to the left, have a clear shot at the green away from the trees, ends up making par. As Brad mentioned, like, no FedEx Cup, nothing going on with FedEx Cup. Like, he has made $59 million in his career. Like, the difference in him making a bogey or a par or a birdie there was like somewhere in like the $60,000 to $75,000 range. So, I mean, it's obviously a good amount of money. But as you mentioned, like, the having to come back the next day, just having to feel like you are that person. And he even tried to apologize to all the volunteers and the grounds crew. And it's like, he's like, if you felt this bad, like, and you knew this was going to be like everything was going to play out kind of exactly how you imagined it, why'd you do it?
Yeah. And the thing for me, and maybe this is just an amateur thought over professionals, I think I've got a better chance at making a better score when, like, in the middle of the heat of my round, towards the end of my play, even if it's a little dark, versus throwing me back out on the course in some random spot on 18 and just having to play from there. I guess, me personally, I think I have a better chance of making a better score while I'm warmed up in the middle of a round, in, like, focused in that mindset. I don't even know if he, like, and maybe this is, once again, my amateur versus professional. How do you even get yourself psyched up to say, all right, I got to go out there, hit a wedge and a two putt?
Well, that's the thing. It wasn't even a wedge. It was like, or a hybrid.
Yeah, like, whatever it was. Right. Yeah.
So I do think in a lot of ways that probably is an amateur way to think. Like they probably have a whole warm up routine that is, like, very set to them, and I'm sure they feel just as loose going to the first tee box.
I guess, yeah, playing devil's advocate, you could just literally grind on the range for an hour and just smack hybrid over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, so I do think he probably saw where the scoreboard was, saw what time it was, and saw that this was going to be like a 7-minute ordeal to get the relief he was looking for. I don't like Matt Kuchar one bit. I do. Once I kind of, I don't think it was, I think it was probably blown out of proportion a little bit. And I do think a lot of people made some good points. Like, if that was Tiger Woods, totally different. I think it could have been a lot of different players, and they would have been like, I saw somebody tweet, like, if that was Tiger Woods, they would have been like absolutely congratulating him on, like, trusting the process and and sticking to the game plan.
Yeah, I mean, he's dug his own bed.
Yeah.
There's another thing that came up, and it doesn't involve this tournament or anything, but there was a point in time where Rory and Matt Kuchar were doing an interview. Have you seen this?
Yeah, I saw, like, I couldn't tell. I watched the video. I couldn't quite tell the context of it.
Yeah, it's hard to tell the context of it, but essentially in the video, Kuchar's talking about how Rory beat him by like 2 points or something, and then he goes on to say how, like, those 2 points were like $300,000 or something. Like, he puts a monetary value on the placement that Rory beat him by, and then Rory just comments and says, "We all know how much money means to him," or something, you know, that. Yeah. Basically taking a shot at him, saying that Kuchar is definitely a frugal guy, probably.
Yeah. No, I think that
he cares a lot more about the money than the. I think it's probably fair to say that Kuchar cares more about winning money on the tour than, like, actually winning on the tour.
Yeah, and I have a feeling, and which is crazy, because, like, once you get to, unless this guy is just, like, gambling his life away, I just don't know how you go through $59 million. Where does that go?
I could try.
Yeah, I would give my best effort. All right, moving on to the Women's Olympic competition taking place also at Le Golf National in France, same place the men's competition did. Lydia Ko wins the gold. She now has all three medals to her name. She won the silver in Rio, and she won the bronze in Tokyo. as far as the United States go, not the greatest performances. Nelly finished at 1 under par. Rose Zhang played in the final group on Sunday, or rather on Saturday, ended up shooting 74. So not her greatest performance. And then Lilia Vu finished at 5 over par, rounding out the medals for women. Esther Hezlet from Germany won the silver medal, and then the gold was won by XY Lin from China, who shot 7 under par, and Esther was at 8 under par. And then, as previously mentioned, Rose Zhang, top American finisher at 5 under par, really had a good chance to kind of push her way into the podium, but just struggled a little bit on that final day. The ladies are right back at it this week. They are headed over to Scotland for the ISPS Honda Women's Scottish Open, which is in Scotland on August 15th through the 18th. So coming up here this week. Moving on, the USAM taking place in the Midwest. At Hazeltine this week, we have 5 guys from Michigan that are in the field. Patrick Deardorff, Clarkston graduate, played at Eastern Michigan, recently graduated from there. He won the Michigan Junior State AM in 19 and in 23, so high hopes for him. Charles DeLong plays at Grand Valley State. Yugi Liu from Ann Arbor plays at, he's a senior at Michigan. PJ Maybank from Sheboygan, he's a sophomore at Oklahoma. And then Julian Messner is from Novi, is a freshman at Michigan State. Had a really good prep career at Novi Catholic Central. So looking forward to seeing how all these guys do. I'm sure there'll be some really good coverage. Well, maybe not really good, but there will be coverage on the Golf Channel or on Peacock this weekend. Hazeltine is a sweet golf course. Love the Midwest golf. So keep an eye out for that. And then finally, the FedEx St. Jude Championship taking place this week in Memphis, Tennessee at TPC Southwind. So this is the first of the 3 playoff events. Top 70 in the field, cut down to 50 after this week. And then the BMW Championship next week, cut down from there to the top 30. So obviously a little bit different than, you like it like this, where it is more, we're not doing top 125 anymore. It's a little bit tighter down to 70. It feels like it is just, it's always the rich get richer sort of thing. I get why they're doing it, but it does feel like you have a lot of really good players that are not in that top 70.
Yeah, I do agree. There's a lot of guys who get missed out, but I like it. I think 125 was too many. That's just a lot of guys. I think that most other sports, the rich get richer, quote unquote, but it's the same thing amongst any other major professional sports. You know, the top teams usually are up towards the top. Top players are up towards the top. They get rewarded the most. I think 75 is a good number. 125 was just a lot of guys.
Yeah, and keeping in mind, that doesn't mean, like before, if you finished outside the top 125, you were having some serious, or rather, if you did not make the playoffs, you were having some serious concerns about where you were playing golf next year. That's not necessarily the case anymore. There's still a lot of space between that top 70 and then 125, 150, so you can still play in the fall events. Still have a good fall series, and then kind of be right back where you started on the PGA Tour. So it's definitely not like you're signing away your career when you finish outside the playoffs now. So past champions. So last year's were obviously Lucas Glover. Once again, just kept it rolling after his win at the Wyndham Championship last year. He followed it up winning here in 2022. Will Zalatoris won this event, so definitely a name to look out for if he's even in the field, which he might not be. As I say that, he might not even be in the field. 2021, Tony Finau. 2020, Dustin Johnson, 2019, Patrick Reed, 18, Bryson DeChambeau, 2017, Dustin Johnson. So quite a few live guys that have played well. Sepp Straka finished runner-up here 2 years ago. Patrick Cantlay finished runner-up here last year. Harris English finished runner-up here in 2020. This is when it was at, when it was still kind of in the Northeast, so maybe not as many, not as good of course comps to take from it. But Harris English is his name I would like to see play well this week. He is right there on the edge of, let me see where he, I think I just, I was just looking at this, and he was right there needing to play well this week. Let me see. Yeah, so right now he's at 51. So he's just outside the BMW Championship at 51. So just looking at those names, the guys that are currently not in the BMW Championship that need to play their way in this week: Harris English at 51, Nick Taylor at 52, Patrick Rogers, Eric Cole, Justin Rose, Ben Griffin, Victor Hovland. Victor Hovland. He has righted the ship, it feels like, and he has started to find it, but whew, it was scary there for a second. Eric Van Rooyen at 57, or rather at 58, Maverick McNealy, Taylor Moore, Peter Malnati, Minwoo Lee. Another guy that feels like he has been playing really solid golf. I'm shocked to see his name all the way at 62. He might just be that much of a showman that whenever he is playing well, I'm very enthralled by it all. I'm not sure if we were talking about a pre-show or on the show, but Jordan Spieth at 63 needs to play well. Mark Hubbard, Brandon Todd, Seamus Power, Nick Dunlop, Jonathan Vegas, Emilio Grillo, and then finishing off at 70 is Victor Perez. So those are all names that really need to kick into high gear, not only to play in the BMW Championship, but then to have automatic bids into all the signature events for next year. So those are, I mean, Jordan Spieth, Minwoo Lee, Victor Hovland, Justin Rose, even Eric Cole played really well last year and is still playing. It's just kind of tough because it feels like a lot of these guys are, there's going to be guys left out. And that's just kind of the way it is. And Will Zalatoris is playing. He's at 49. So somebody to look out for this week, maybe. Do you have the odds board there?
I do. Coming in as the favorite this week, Olympic champion, gold medalist, Scottie Scheffler at plus 360. Behind him, we have his fellow American, Xander Schauffele at 7-1. Rory McIlroy, 8.5-1. Colin Morikawa is at 12-1. Ludvig Aubert is at 20-1. Patrick Cantlay, 22-1. Tommy Fleetwood, 25-1. Hideki Matsuyama, 33-1. We finally have our first grouping of players at 35-1, and that is Victor Hovland, Tom Kim, Russell Henley, and Tony Finau. And I will round it out here at 40-1 with Corey Connors. However, there are a lot of names that I did not mention that you mentioned previously. Looking at someone like a Jordan Spieth, he's looking at 70-1 this week. And he's really got the best chances of a lot of those guys on the bubble, outside of Victor Hovland, who you mentioned, who I believe he's a little bit lower on the bubble. But for guys truly on the bubble, Jordan's got the best chance, it looks like, this week. But of guys I didn't mention, Justin Thomas, 45-1, Shane Lowry, 60-1, Wyndham Clark, 65-1. So there's a lot of talent this week and a lot of guys who have some pretty long shot odds to win. Not saying that they will win, but these tournaments do seem to have a lot of potential value in finishing positions.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially because when they're playing for more points, and at this stage where really finishing position can make some of a difference, and unless you're Matt Kuchar, where it really is pretty irrelevant. I'd like to see Wyndham play well this week, just given the fact that he finished so strong 2 weeks ago, that maybe that kind of sparked a little something, and then a little reset. Had the last 10 days off or so, and now maybe back at it. I don't love the course setup. It just seems like it is narrow enough where, if the drivers get a little crooked, that could be a concern. But if you can just hit that nice high fade, Sepp Straka, another name I do like, just obviously runner up here 2 years ago. He's ball striker, ball striker, ball striker. So a guy that can get around if there is water, things like that. I don't expect that to be a huge issue for him. Patrick Cantlay, I mentioned, just feels like he just needs to do something. He's always right there, but he's just not doing enough.
No.
Go do something. That's my advice to Patrick Cantlay.
And I don't hate the Cantlay take. He's the guy that is so frustrating because every week it's the same mantra. It's like he's so close, he's got to win something. But one of these weeks, I mean, he's too good to not ever not win. Like, he's going to win eventually. It's just a matter of time, I think, for him. I really like Colin Morikawa this week. I think he's been stringing along. I don't think he played tremendously well at the Olympics, but I think that that's just a different mindset for a tournament. And before that, he was playing so well coming into the Olympics. So I almost view the Olympics as an outlier, even though he didn't play horribly. But I think I had a little bit higher expectations for him in France. I could see him putting some together and coming home with a victory. I mean, do we talk about Scotty? Is it worth it? I mean, I think that there's a very strong chance he wins, but I mean, are we becoming a basic podcast if we just pick Scotty every week?
Yeah, I don't think just from a pure like investment standpoint, 3.5 to 1 is just not. That's just not going to make you rich in betting on golf. That's going to be your ballot. It's an uphill battle. I don't know how to bet against him, because I don't want to say he's proven he's by far. He might be darn near. He's by far the best player when it's just PGA Tour players. Guy doesn't lose signature events, and this is essentially what this is. There is no cut. I don't know. I would love to see somebody, because right now, if Sky is playing his A-minus game, he's not being beat. It might even have to be like a B game. He just has to be kind of missing those putts that he's been making, which kind of go back to earlier this year, I guess, is kind of the best place where he, or even like last year where he was leaving himself so many opportunities. If we went back to that Scotty, or even like a somewhat of that Scotty, then it could be a toss up. But right now, it's just like, he hasn't done anything to say that he wouldn't win.
Yeah. How do you bet against a guy who really just has to go out there and make 4 or 5 1 putts around? I mean, realistically, he's hitting pretty much, you know, most greens.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe more than 4 or 5. We'll call it like 6 or 7. 6 or 7 1 putts, but some of those are up and downs, which he's, you know, very great at from off the green. So he doesn't have to do a lot. There's no concern with the driver. There's no concern with the irons. That's just the only concern is if he makes putts, but he doesn't even really have to be like spectacular there. I mean, he doesn't have to be the best putter.
He has to be downright average.
Yes.
Just an average to PGA Tour player.
Cause everything else is so above average.
Yeah, no. And yeah, who's to say, who's to say he won't win?
Not me.
Me neither. Because I was definitely working on this theory that he didn't win past like June, but that theory has since been shot down in a flaming ball of fire. So I think we can toss that one in the garbage. Start working on the next theory.
The baby changed everything.
Yeah. No, maybe. Absolutely. You get arrested one time, you have one kid, and look what happens.
It's got a new perspective on life.
Yeah, so I mentioned in the intro, so we have two new golf courses coming to Michigan. I think, so Arcadia Bluffs Golf Club is adding a 12-hole course. I think this has been in the works now for several months, and it's probably our fault that we missed it. But kind of seems like just what everyone is doing as far, and it does sound like it's going to be more of a short course rather than an actual, like a full-size golf course, very much part of the golf resort plan where you have everything you need there and a place to hang out after your round. And it's great for on-course accommodations, things like that. But then Sweetgrass up in the UP is adding a true nine-hole golf course, three par threes, three par fours, three par fives. And it sounds like it is part of a much bigger plan. They're spending like $18 million on renovations between the golf course and a new pro shop and a new convention center and so on and so forth. So very exciting. I saw today that Michigan has the most public golf courses in the country, in Michigan, and then the third most golf resorts behind California and Michigan, or California and Florida.
Yeah, I mean, we've said it, and I think probably everybody who listens to this podcast, since I'm assuming we're probably a very Michigan-centric fan or audience, understands how nice the golf is here. But I think on both of those topics, just adding to that point on Arcadia Bluffs, if for those of you who are familiar with Garrett Clark on YouTube, he's one of the Good Good members. He has his own personal channel, GM Golf. He just did a video at Arcadia Bluffs, and it was honestly pretty cool. Hunter, I don't know if you watched it. I think you did. It was pretty cool to listen to him talk about the course and just talk about how it was like a destination, like dream golf course for him to play. And you can just tell just in the way that he's describing it, kind of, I don't want to say like how much it meant for him to play there, but he did a different style approach to his videos. He even was talking about it and how he was just trying to take it in, soak in the course, enjoy it. But I think more so speaks to we're pretty spoiled here. I mean, that guy gets to play a ton of golf courses all across the world. So for him to talk about Arcadia Bluffs in the light that he was pretty cool for me, especially since it's kind of in our backyard here. And then just with Sweetgrass, it just kind of adding on to it, I think that with Michigan golf and with the YouTubers that we see making videos here, you know, we've had Foreplay come to do the loop and do a video there. No Laying Up did a Michigan series. The game has grown a lot here, and we've had a lot of people that fly in from all over. And I think that looking at the investment that like Sweetgrass is making just kind of goes to show how much it's become a destination place. I don't think that you can invest $18 million into your golf course unless you have a lot of people playing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially for the middle of nowhere too. I mean, like you have to, you aren't just passing by Sweetgrass. Maybe you're starting US 2, just driving along and you just happen to want to play some golf, but that is very much a destination golf course, and Arcadia is the exact same way. You certainly aren't driving past Arcadia and finding yourself at a golf course. You are looking for it. I watched that Garrett Clark video and thought, we need to play Arcadia when it's not April. That was like my big thing. I was like, this looks very nice. He looks comfortable. Yeah. He looks very warm.
It looks a lot different than when we play it, that's for sure.
Yeah. So that was my big takeaway. But yeah, golf, there's zero doubt golf has grown a ton since COVID. And it's cool to see. And we are, I think there was a long time where I did take it for granted how many like really, really good golf courses we have. Cause there's a lot of areas. There's not this, like nowhere near as much golf as what we have. Different options that usually at different price points too. It's not like it's all high end stuff. There's usually something for everybody, which is nice.
Yep. Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I think even a lot of the places downstate there's more resort style. You know, whenever I think of resort golf in Michigan, I think of Northern Michigan, but I think that there's, you know, I look at Pilgrim's Run down near here that's turning into a little bit more resort style with stay and play.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of spreading.
Absolutely. All right. Anything else?
No, I think that's about it. I did not play golf this past weekend. However, I am playing golf this weekend in a new state. I'm playing golf in California on Friday.
Ooh, ah.
Yes, I know. So I'm playing golf.
You don't have any PTO days left. They're all gone.
Yeah, it's been quite the year. Really, it's just was my honeymoon. The honeymoon was a killer. That was 8 days. That was a lot.
What are you doing in California?
So Lauren, my wife, his cousin's getting married in nice. Tahoe. So we're going to Lake Tahoe.
Nice.
And I am playing at the Genoa course in Carson Valley, in Tahoe.
Are you bringing your clubs?
So, I am not.
Ooh.
So it's going to be very interesting. It's going to be a rental set situation. It just didn't seem worth it to fly them just for one 18-hole round when we're going to have layovers going there and coming back. And so the likelihood of me getting my clubs home seemed pretty low. And I have a few other things this fall that I'm more concerned about having my golf clubs for than that. So I'd rather leave them and know that I'll have them for the two things that I have coming up this fall. And the rental's like $60. So it's going to be interesting. They'll probably be regular flex clubs with God knows what kind of clubs they'll be. But I'm hoping that this will be more about like the views and enjoying the golf course than trying to play well.
Maybe let's give you a whole new perspective on golf. It might just change it.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
You can't teach an old dog new tricks.
No, you can't. All right, well, have fun with that. That sounds great.
Yeah, so I'll have a little synopsis of how that went, but it's kind of cool to add another state. We're adding two new states because we'll be playing in Georgia now this fall. So
yeah,
I don't know if you've played in Georgia, but that'll be a new
one.
Yeah,
that's where
we're
back,
well.
And I played Savannah Golf Club. So we actually played right on the road from the landings.
Oh, so you have played Georgia. All right. Well, that'll be a new one for me. So I've got two new states this year.
Awesome. All right. Well, have fun. And we will, good luck at the FedEx St. Jude Championship. We will talk to you all next week.
All right. Have a good weekend, everybody.
See ya.